is now well known that planting new churches and campuses is the most effective way of reaching the lost. And launching in rented venues like schools or theaters is one of the most cost-effective ways to launch a new church. If you are planning a launch or are trying to figure out how to do church well in rented venues, we encourage you to check out our friends at Portable Church. The team at Portable Church Industries takes your vision and creates engaging environments that keep volunteer retention high and allow more energy to be spent on ministry. Go to portablechurch.com/Lifeway to learn more and find free customized resources that teach how to launch portable and strong.
Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
Welcome back to another episode of the Group Answers podcast show. I'm Brian Daniel with Chris Surratt. And Chris, we're doing something different today.
Yeah, this is kind of fun. We've done remote before.
That's correct.
We had Robbie Gallaty in a middle of a bookstore.
Yes.
Like last year. And then a couple years ago, we actually went to the SBC.
Right in the middle of the SBC there we were.
That's the middle of it. Yep. And I don't know how anybody heard what we said because it was so loud. But we're kind of doing that again. We're
remote. We've done live shows.
No, we haven't.
You
want to say we've done live. You wish. Brian wants to be a radio DJ. That's like his dream.
I thought we'd done live. I'm sorry.
No, we haven't done live. Nobody will let us go live on here.
What could happen? What could possibly go wrong?
What could go wrong?
I know.
And that's another question we will never ask on the Group Answers show. But to pick up on where Chris was going, we are being videoed this time.
Yeah.
Just like
what?
On
There's
ESPN.
A camera?
Yeah, well it's behind the curtain over there. That's right.
Well, we've always been told we have faces for radio. So we decided to go ahead and test that and bring the cameras
in. All assumptions.
Yes.
Well, and since we are Robin is already talking, let's go ahead and introduce this episode's guest, Robin Dance.
Yeah, so excited to have you, Robin. Let me give a formal introduction here for our listeners, but you're a former marketing and PR professional, now encourage others in life and faith as a writer, speaker, and small group leader. You're founding contributor to Encourage, Dayspring's online community for women, and you've been featured in Home Life, Mature Living magazines, and an advocate for children in poverty as a Compassion International blogger in India, which I read that in your book. That is so cool because I knew some other people that were on that trip, so that's very cool. And you believe in listening well, laughter, and generosity are indispensable superpowers. And there might not be a sweeter ministry than a warm delivery of sourdough bread. I like when these get really personal.
I really wish I had been in a bacon mood and had brought some bread to you guys next time, right?
Oh, please. Yes. Yeah. Now all I'm doing is smelling bread.
Yeah. Can I come back if I promise that?
Yeah.
Come back anyway. But okay. Yeah, bring bread.
Please
do. I'll be toting.
It says you're married to your college sweetheart and a mom to a daughter and two sons, and you currently live in Middle Georgia. And people can find you online at robindance.me. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Very cool. And so, you just wrote this book, For All Who Wonder, which is a great book. We'll talk about that in just a few minutes.
Great title, great cover. So I'm curious about Middle Georgia. That's not a term that I'm accustomed to seeing. Where is that about?
I'm not telling exactly. It is an hour south of Atlanta, and the locals there call it Midja because Middle Georgia is much too much to say. Midja.
All right. How big a region is Midja? A
couple hundred thousand.
And does it include the city that where you live and surrounding area, or are there more what you would call cities? Does Georgia have cities outside of Atlanta and a few others?
That is really funny.
Deep into Georgia.
It really is. It really is.
All those states are the same. I'm from Kentucky. I can make fun of other southern states.
Can you?
Well,
it's a sleepy southern town, and let's just say it's a county city incorporated kind of a situation.
And you're,
I'm elusive.
And you're.
I'm not telling you want my address. Can we?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't.
Cards and letters, right here to Lifeway.
But you're a little bit of the student of the South because you've been in Georgia and South Carolina, right?
Yeah, and Tennessee. I started in Georgia, went to school in South Carolina, stayed there for a while, really liked it, ended up in Tennessee for about 10 years, and now I'm back in Middle Georgia.
Everything in me doesn't want to ask this question. And I'll say why in a second, but what school in South Carolina?
That would have been the best school in South Carolina, Clemson University.
You did ask for that.
I did ask
for that. Go yeah. Tigers. Yeah. They are something else, aren't they?
They are. Mm-hmm. They're good.
I love that you're wearing orange today. Oh, wait a second. We've got cameras to either prove or call me out as a liar.
I'm also not wearing Burnett? But what's the...
he doesn't even know the colors, people.
It's terrible. My daughter goes to the USC, as we like to say in the South, the University of South Carolina, so... Go Gamecocks.
Garnet and black.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry.
And you grew up in Athens, right?
I did. Isn't that that's interesting. How could I do that? My husband will say, and he will love that I'm saying this in a public setting, that I repented and went to Clemson rather than going to Georgia. But interestingly, since I ended back in Georgia, my youngest went to school in Athens. And so we are a house divided.
Ooh.
Mm. Yeah. And did you hear Georgia and Clemson are playing next year?
I saw that on the crawler. I sure did.
Yeah. I'm paying whatever it takes. I'm going to that game. It'll be a family situation.
I'm just thankful nobody has said Roll Tide. I can pretty much take anything but that.
I'm right there with you. Yeah. I'm right there
but guys,
with you.
Guys, we're in March. I mean, does it have to stick with football? I mean, do we have to?
Where are we going next?
Well, you know, it's one of my favorite sports season. It's baseball season.
We teach you up for that.
You just gloss right over college basketball, I see.
I just kind of baseball always makes me think of warm things because spring training
Absolutely.
Makes me think of spring, even though they start technically in the winter. But it just makes me think warm thoughts. And I'm a baseball fan. I'm a St. Louis Cardinals fan to the core. We don't cheat like other teams. But yeah, it's an exciting time. Well, my wife is a native Houstonian. Oh. We'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
We'll leave it at that. Yeah.
All right, so Robin, you've been...
Is this sports talk?
You've been around the South, probably traveled outside of the South, I would guess, extensively. So, first question here, for all who wonder, what prompted you to write this book now?
Well, I was invited to write it. I write for, you mentioned in my intro, Encourage, which is an online community for women founded by Dayspring. And we have a really great reading community, people who engage us on our blog and in all the social spaces. And our Encourage staff approached me to gauge my interest on writing a book for our community. So it is written with that Encourage reader in mind, with a universal application really to anyone who struggled in their faith. And so when I read a description of maybe some of the felt needs in that community, I thought no one else can write this book. I'm the one who God is calling out to write it. And it started out in one direction. It kind of took a pivot along the way, and I tell you, B&H and Lifeway and Dayspring and Encourage were great to let me write the story that God was really leading me into writing. And so it's all about Him. And I tried to be obedient to what He was asking of me in the telling of this, because there's some pretty personal things in the book as we get deeper into it. But everything was prayed over. I think it was even those uncomfortable places are the places God was leading me to go. And so I was just trying to be obedient to what He was given to me to tell. I lived it first, and then I lived to tell.
Now, you started, if I understand right, blogging.
Right.
Way back when. When did you start blogging?
Oh, gosh. That was back anonymously in 2005.
Oh, wow.
And longtime readers know me as Pensive. I thought it was the most brilliant title for a blog. It's spelled P-E-N-S-I-E-E-V-E. Ooh. Wait, Ooh. I-E-V-E. Yeah, it's a Harry Potter reference, actually. Right. And if you are familiar with the book or movie series, a pensive is a stone basin that can hold an extracted memory. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was brilliant. I was so proud of myself for coming up with that. That was back when we were so cute with blogs. And, you know, you have a lot of mommy blogs with mama names in it. But I wanted to be, heady and intellectual with a Harry Potter reference.
Yeah.
Go figure.
That's awesome.
So no one ever saw it for about 6 months. And even then, it was just a different world. Back in 2006, 2007, it was before social came into its own. And so you only had commenting communities, and my kids were in school. Oh my goodness, we had made the decision. We had made a move. I was in Tennessee. My kids were first, third, and fifth grade, or by that point, a couple of years into that move. And I was a chauffeur. And so my husband worked 45 minutes from home and I had to be available to drive them. I could not go back to work full time. Mm. So writing was a creative outlet. I volunteered at the school as much as I possibly could. And this filled the gaps a little bit.
I started blogging. I'm one of those. I started in 2004.
Oh, wow.
And what I loved about that time, and I think you actually talk about that a little bit, is the community that was built through blogging. Like it just felt like there were only a few, at least in the kind of the genre that I was in, bloggers out there. We all kind of knew each other. And then people would go and they would comment on the blog and you would answer that. It would go back and forth.
Yeah.
And,
you know, and so you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
did we cross paths?
We probably did.
We probably
some point.
Did.
I was the same way. I was a church planner and at the time and nobody read it for about a year or two. And then somebody who was a little bit, you know, better read than I was noticed it, put something on their blog. People from their blog started reading my blog, and then you get into the blog links and, you know, all that. And it didn't get huge, but, you know, people started reading it a little bit.
It was a sweet era.
But I miss the community that kind of happened around that. Do you feel that too now, kind of writing? And I know you still blog. I'm not as consistent as I used to be.
Oh, wow.
Do you miss those times?
It was a sweet time. And the organic nature of it, sure. Yeah, it was... What people actually read, they thoughtfully commented. It was very engaged. You weren't trying to do anything with it in those early years. Money came into the picture at some point. Brands started tapping into the influence of a blogger, and it took something away from it, I think. And what's really interesting, and I don't know if you've seen any of this, just recently I have seen some of the OG bloggers popping back up into Facebook groups, into some other spaces to try to recapture some of that because people have a certain affection for it because social is its own thing, right? You know, Instagram, it's visual. You have, I mean, TikTok now and whatever Facebook is to people and Twitter and everybody has their favorite or their pet, I think. But there's just something sweet about that actual thoughtful interaction among people. And there were commenting communities. You know, it was almost tribal. And if we could bring new people into our tribe. And so back then, I mean, you know, we did a lot of things to try to gain traffic, I think, back in those days. And that was even before ad networks. It wasn't about that. It was about actually, if you're going to the trouble of writing, how about somebody read it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You
would comment on somebody else's blog to kind of get them to notice you.
Yeah. And it worked.
They would come and comment on your blog. But I miss the community. I think, you know, Facebook to some degree has replaced that.
Yeah.
But it feels like it's more of a billboard than a conversation. It's more of just one way. And I don't know. That's just the way I feel about it.
Well, definitely with blogging, if you were doing it well and right, I think it was an ongoing conversation. And you know, there was a running joke, and people in my life knew anything you say might be blogged against you. And I would tell people, I'm going to blog you. You know, that was just a BLAWG. Let's see how you spell that one, the way I say it. But it was fun. And it you know, it is what it is. Life clicks along and it has evolved into a thing. And so many people have launched careers through blogging. And you know, I think Instagram and Facebook, to a degree, there's microblogging. People use long form in those spaces, which is I've never gotten real comfortable with long form in those spaces. I do it sometimes. I'm trying to play well with others.
Yeah,
but
a lot of celebrities will do that. They'll write like a half a book on an Instagram post.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what
Instagram will cut
for.
You off eventually. You put enough words up there and they're saying enough is enough.
I haven't gotten to that point.
Yeah, I have once or twice. And I'm like, huh.
So, Robin, most of our listeners, as you know, are in the group space and community, like you guys were just talking about. They are small group leaders. They are small group pastors. They are ministers of education. There are people that are touching community, fostering community, specifically biblical community in some form or fashion. And the book is on doubt and, of course, according to the title, wandering, which is, I've said it already, but it's a great title. It's a great idea. I'm so glad people like you are taking up this subject. We've had Barnabas Piper on a couple of times, who also has a book on doubt. I think it would be helpful to know the process that you went through to get to this point of putting this down on pages. I'm sure, I know that there is a story behind this book of your own journey. What was that process? What led you to write it? Of course, you've already answered that and said that you were invited to write it. From that point forward, was this journey, was it more like, it's time for me to do this? Did you wrestle with it? What was the writing process like? What were some of the things that you maybe struggled with along the way?
One of the biggest struggles, just to lead with that, is I have a family who's private. I don't have kids who are active in social media, little bit. A husband who's extremely private. So when we were looking at pursuing this book and putting some things in print out there among the people, you know, whoever might find their way to it, I had to make sure my family was on board with it first. And so I was careful to respect people in my life. I am very vague in places intentionally. And so a lot of the processes was on my knees, literally, because I wanted to steward well this experience to encourage the person who was in a similar headspace and heart space and spiritual space that I was in, right? This it was a thing that I lived through, I lived to tell. And so what can God do with an experience? He can use it for other people's good and his glory. It can minister to the heart of others. And so I felt a huge responsibility to redeem really a dark, dark season in my own life for his glory, right? It was not wasted. Not a minute of the pain or the heartache or the struggle or the angst or the questions or the doubt, not a bit of it was wasted, because he was accomplishing holy work first in me. I had to live it, and it had to be refined in me, but then ultimately to pass along to someone else. And so the writing of it was hard because I had to go back into some pretty painful personal spaces.
How far back?
The book starts with my first memory in life, which is kind of a fun story. My first memory in life is in church. I was Mary, the mother of Jesus, in a church pageant. And that is, you know, I've often thought about that. That is, it's really sweet, I think, that my first memory would be in church. But that goes to speak to church culture and the culture of being a church girl, right? You grow up with a certain head knowledge that you get by osmosis. You know, that's not necessarily heart knowledge. That's not even necessarily Holy Spirit led. It's like the nature of being. And so I'm not really sure where I'm going with that. Let's get back on track with the question, maybe, other than to say the book primarily takes place in a 10-year time frame. You were asking about time frame. And I would say that my spiritual desert, where I was really in the thick of it, was years long. I don't know that I could put a number on it, because it's almost like walking into a body of water, and you start out at the shore, right? And the water is ankle deep. And step by step, you get a little bit deeper. It hits your knees. It hits your thighs. It gets up to your waist. It's you know, middle of your chest. It gets up to your neck. And before you know it, you're over water. Your head is underwater. And then it starts getting shallower again, and it goes back down. That's what I really feel like my walk was like, is this walk through a body of water that starts real subtle, gets real deep, and then slowly recesses as you get to the other side of a thing. The funny thing is, my ankles are still wet. I don't have all the answers. I'm not completely resolved in my faith, but now I know what to do with that. I know I understand the significance and value. That has actual value to me on this side of that walk.
When you think of the word wander, I think sometimes we can picture somebody who is just lost, that's meandering. What's the difference to you between wandering and just being lost?
You know, I talk about that in the book. There's a chapter that really talks about being lost. For the sake of this content, right, I'm talking about the difference in a salvific sense. Is that even how you say that word?
That's a good word. Yep.
Yeah.
It's real.
So when you're in this position, you question your salvation. You wonder if it was ever real. One of those strong messages that I hope is a takeaway from the book is, if you're asking those questions, to me, that is evidence of salvation. Your salvation doesn't come and go. A lost person doesn't actually care whether or not they're lost. And so to me, for the person who's out there who's asking that question, let that be an evidence, not to your faith, right? Because if you're asking that, there is something, the Holy Spirit is doing some kind of stirring in your heart and head. And to me, it is good to hear that that is an evidence of your faith, not your lack of faith. I kind of get things real backwards in my head in this book, and it was all good. You know, I looked at things very differently in the process of writing this book. I mean, I had to go back into those hard spaces and relive some of it. And so I learned a lot through the walking through again, yeah, the second time.
I was reading a book a few years ago. I do not remember the name of it. It may have been The Fifth Discipline, but that's not important. But there was a season in book writing, and maybe it's still there, where there was authors would put a quote at the beginning of each chapter that was just kind of a random kind of quote.
Yeah.
And this one was, "I'm not sure who discovered water, but I'm positive it wasn't a fish." And I always thought that was a good illustration for disorientation, that you're in something and that's all you've known. And so to know anything different would be foreign.
Right.
So one of the questions that we had for you was, so when you were in this season of wandering, did you know you were in it at the time? Or is this something that is only, you're only able to comment on and really, that God redeems more looking back at it?
It definitely is a hindsight as 2020 sort of a thing. That being said, I knew that I was questioning God. I knew that I had doubts. I don't think I saw it so much as a wandering in season. I knew I was struggling and I was ashamed. I carried a lot of guilt with that. When you have grown up in a church culture, when your children are in a Christian school, I never stopped going to church throughout this entire season. I never stopped being active in Bible study. I never stopped praying. It wasn't a renouncing of faith as much as it was unbelief or disbelief or misbelief. And I didn't share that with anyone, though. I did not let anyone into that place because of my shame. It was like what you're saying. That is all I had ever known. Mm-hmm. To suddenly realize that maybe...
Wait a minute.
Yeah. I didn't know what to do with that. And I didn't know how to express it to anyone. And I didn't really feel safe sharing it with anyone because it would be admitting really a failure, maybe. You know, I hadn't really thought about it in terms of failure, but it was admitting something I wasn't comfortable admitting. And yet I knew I could not continue professing things that I didn't believe. I knew I wasn't fooling God. I think I was fooling myself and certainly the people around me. It wasn't intentional. I think all of this is so subtle. Subtle is a word that I've used often to describe where you are in this. For me, it did not happen overnight. It was a slow fade. I think some people can come face to face with tragedy, illness, and all of a sudden everything that they believed or had faith in comes into question. Mm-hmm. I think it can happen a couple of different ways. For me, it was that slow evolution of, really, it was a deconstructing of faith as I knew it into something that was more real, more authentic, something I could get my hands around.
There's a couple of ways, a couple of things that Robin's talking about, Chris, and we are all small group leaders here.
Yeah.
And I can remember times, and Chris, I bet you can too, and we know Robin can, when you've looked out at your group and you could just see it on somebody's faces,
yeah,
that they're, it's like, oh, I'm not sure that I'm buying into what we're talking about tonight. And I think that is triggered by, it can be a slow roll. It mm-hmm. could be just a series of events or something emerging out of a culture or a bubble.
Yeah.
And asking questions for the first time, uh-huh. or it can be triggered by an event.
Mm-hmm.
But Chris, I mean, you've looked out at a group and you've seen that on faces before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, in many ways, we can be talking about God's love or how he meets our needs, and I'll look out and see somebody who obviously is not there,
mm-hmm.
doesn't quite believe that God is there for them in that moment or whatever they're going through. And I wanted to ask you, when you think about Christians in community, mm-hmm. what kind of advice would you give for a small group leader or somebody who sees that in their group, that obviously there's doubt, there's hurt, there's people that are wandering right now? What would you do in that situation?
As a leader, if I saw that, I would want to take advantage of that by taking that opportunity to point the person who you see as wandering to Jesus. And let me tell you how you do that. With a velvet hammer. I say that a little, I'm being a little silly there. It's got to be a soft response to the wanderer, because it is not a time to be an apologist of the faith. You do not have to be defensive. All that is necessary for that person who is struggling is to know that they have a safe refuge to express the truth of their heart. You've got to be a good listener. You've got to provide them space without having to fix it, because you know this. It's not your job as their leader to fix their heart. You can't. Only the Holy Spirit can do that sort of heart work. But you can point them to Jesus. You can point them to what you know is true. You can speak from your experience, and that's okay. But the first thing you do is listen and pray for the wisdom to know how to love them well and to give them the space to be there. It could be a while. And that's okay, because the truth is, and what you need to understand as a leader, is God is still doing a work in that life. And so you just got to let God be God in that. And, it, you know, you can get, it can sound a little bit like Sunday school answer, but the truth is people need to know that they can speak the truth of their heart. Why do you want to set them up for a lie, to tell, you know, to profess something that they don't actually believe? Give them the space to tell the truth. And then I think from there, it diffuses the strength of those doubts. I mean, again, my doubt is not completely resolved. I still have questions. What I have learned, and the encouragement to the church leader, is what that person can learn is that wandering doubts, question asking, can actually be a bridge back to God. God uses that in my life. He lets me ask those questions. He's not threatened by them. He's not surprised by them. He is using that as a method to draw me closer to Him. And so once I began to see my questions as valuable to me, when I began to see some of these hard seasons as something that was doing a holy work in my life, somehow that freed me up to see God's faithfulness. You know, it was never about my faith or lack thereof. It's always been about God's faithfulness, because He's true to who He is. That doesn't change. Mm-hmm. Whether or not I believe it, it's true.
I know in my season of wandering, I think one of the things that I would tell myself would be, don't forsake the rhythms. Keep getting up, keep giving it a go, keep doing what you know to be right. Michael Kelly, someone that we've worked with, has put it, do the next right thing is the way he puts it, which he may have ripped that off from somebody else, I don't know.
Well, Emily Freeman has a book with a similar title.
There you go. Yeah, what would you tell yourself?
Well, I actually did that. So again, as I say, I would have present anyone who saw me, anyone who was in my life in this season, saw me going through the rhythms of faith. It was a very interior battle, you know, and it was very spiritual. You know, I do believe that Satan is always and only against us. He will, I can't blame it all on him, but I know that he knows that God has a plan for my life, that God has a call and on me, and he doesn't want to see that flourish, right? I think that God knows that my actions were very mechanical for a season. I literally, there's a day, and I write about it in the book, where I bang my fist on the table and I'm like, God, if you're real, you're going to have to show me. Mm. And guess what? Sometimes he reveals himself to you and sometimes he doesn't. He happened to show me that day in a way that could only be God. You know, God or coincidences are a thing, right? And it was so beautiful. And there, throughout my story, if you are looking, you will see evidences of God. I think Romans 10:20 maybe also speaks to, if you aren't looking, you will see the evidences of God sometimes. And he showed up for me both ways. And so those are the type things. Like, I feel like if you're the leaders who are listening to this right now, a conversation like this to me is a lifeline to someone. It is a God wink to someone to say, God sees you. He knows. Maybe a leader is struggling right now and they have that mantle of guilt and shame because they're a leader. How can they be in this position of doubt? You know, how did they land there? God can use it. God is speaking. I think God can speak through a conversation like this to encourage the doubter or the person who is ministering to someone in doubt to say, I noticed this. I know this about you. It's not a surprise. We're going to get through to the heart of you. We're going to refine your faith, and you will actually be strengthened on the other side. You know, he works in ways that we can't anticipate, and he is not above using any means to get our attention to do a transforming work. And whether it's not dependent on my belief. It absolutely has nothing to do with my belief. It's all about him.
That's good. That's really good. Would suggest anyone who is going through a season of wandering, or if you feel lost, or even if you're not, you're going to at some point.
Well, right? Or you're going to know someone who is.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
This gets inside the head of someone and a particular story. Look, my story is only important so much as that it points to Jesus, right, as the answer. Yeah. I happen to look to God for my answers in this. For whatever reason, I did seek him. I wasn't seeking culture for my answers. I was not seeking the church for my answers. I actually was praying to a God that I wasn't even sure that existed. And somehow I think he honored that. I do believe that God is praying for the wanderer. His word tells us over and over again that he is interceding for us, right? There is an expectation that's noted in scripture that when we return, use what you've gone through to strengthen your brother. Jesus says that to Peter. And so I think it is for me, it is so heartening to know that we have a God who is interceding for us, who knows the state of our heart, right? And guess what? He still loves us. Mm-hmm. He still died for us. He's still forgiving us. He's forgiven us. He will forgive us. Mm-hmm. It's remarkable. It's a remarkable thing.
It's good. So I would suggest picking this book up for all who wonder. What I loved about it is it's your voice. I mean, as you read this, I felt like, you know, I knew who you are. You're telling your story, but it's, you know, your voice, and it's inspirational, and I just love it. So I would pick that up. And I'd also suggest, if you want to follow up with your group, we had Barnabas on just a little while ago, and he has a new Bible study called Help My Unbelief. Yeah. And I think that'd be a great companion to this book.
He gets a little nod in the book.
Oh, good.
Yeah, he does.
Oh, good.
Yeah, Barnabas is great. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Group Answers Show. I'd like to thank the wonderful and amazing Robin Dance. Thanks for making time today.
Hey.
How long are you in town for?
About 24 hours. We are blowing and glowing. Glowing? A little bit of that. Under these lights, a little bit of that. Yeah.
Not in March. Not in March in Nashville. Give it a week.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, the weather will change. That's Denver.
Thanks for being with us today. We would kindly ask you, wherever you listen to podcasts, to subscribe to us, rate us, leave a comment. Chris, do we accept negatives or only positives?
Only positives.
Only positive comments. You heard it here.
If you want to do a negative comment, we will accept that at idontcare.lifeway.com.
No. We actually do want to hear from everyone, and we jest. We do accept constructive criticism. Thank you for being with us, and we'll look forward to being with you next time.